Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Everybody, and welcome to Onceable episode 96, where we're going to be talking about Once Upon a Time season 6 episode 3, The Other Shoe. I'm Brittany, and tonight I'm joined by Kristen and Laura. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
So we're back. We're talking about the Cinderella-centric episode, and if you have any comments on this episode or any other stuff that's going on in Once Upon a Time season 6, you can get in touch with us at Onceable on Twitter, or comment on this post or any of the Once Upon a Time posts on Hypeable, and we'll be sure to check that out. Let's start with a thumbs up, thumbs down for this week's episode. Laura, what did you give The Other Shoe?
I really liked it. Thumbs up. This episode did exactly what I've been saying that Once Upon a Time needs to do, which is bring back characters we've seen, revisit the stories that we've seen, and not just do this like slapdash Hercules thing like last year. This was good. It was fun. It put a new twist on the fairy tale. Really enjoyed it.
And Kristen, what about you?
I agree. It was a thumbs up, just a plain old normal one, because it was a good episode. It was pretty solid. I felt like it advanced the plot, and yeah, it worked for me, so I was happy.
Yeah, I'm also going to give it a thumbs up. I thought what they did with Cinderella's story was interesting. They advanced Emma's story, Regina's story. They gave a little bit more context to what's going on with Snow and David. And they even checked in with a couple of characters we haven't really seen much since the season premiered. So yeah, thumbs up for me as well. And speaking of characters that we haven't seen yet this season, I'm going to kick off our favorite quotes, and mine is when Emma barges in on Grumpy's session with Archie, and, you know, Grumpy's all upset, and he's complaining about Dopey going for a master's degree, and Emma interrupts him, and she's like, "I thought Dopey was a tree," and Grumpy replies, "We got him out weeks ago, really. Do you think we sit around and wait for you to do everything?" And then just storms out. And I thought that was just brilliant. Like, life does go on outside of what we see. And I know at the end of last season, one of our biggest complaints that we kept coming back to was, is Dopey still just a tree sitting out there in the middle of the road? And we have an answer to that. So this episode did a lot.
And it was so funny because, We were talking about like so many of the loopholes and stuff. And honestly, I had totally forgotten what happened to Dopey. And then when he brought that up, I'm like, oh, good. We fixed him. So I appreciated that. But I'm glad they patched up like a plot hole right there, which was great.
Some other characters that came back. Laura, what was your favorite quote?
Oh, I totally laughed out loud and did a spit take on this one. It was when Snow said, "Dr. Jekyll and Dr. Frankenstein, you know what that sounds like?" And Regina goes, "The world's scariest sounding pediatrician's office." I roared. I was like, oh my gosh. And boy, I think it was just even more funny than anything for me is just, first of all, like, Whale with like the snow miser hair still is like very weird. Like the ice blonde look just looks bizarre. But also the fact that the line that just kept coming through my head is like, he's there talking to Snow, Mary, Margaret, whatever, is the, you know, "You slept with Whale? We were cursed." Like that just sort of, I was like, yeah, she's given a thumbs up to the guy she was sleeping with under the curse. Hey, she's gotten over her baggage. Everybody can. I mean, it was just, I don't know. I just, the whole thing just struck me as hilariously funny.
Yeah, I'm kind of pumped that he's back. And he sort of did the same thing. Like you were saying, like, Mary Margaret's, no, I can't keep track. But he did the same thing when he came in. He was like, "Whale, no, I'm Dr. Frankenstein. Like, that's what you will know me as." And I really appreciated that.
I think his hair is all because of iZombie.
Yeah, probably. I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's bleach blonde because of iZombie. And they're just like, we'll just roll with it. Whale / Frankenstein just needed a new look. And so he's going with the ice blonde now.
Yeah, I will say, though, there is one aspect that I do, like when we're back to our thumbs up and thumbs down, I really did like the episode, but there is still one aspect that is still bothering me, and it bothered me last year, is, so they have Nurse Ratched and the Indian who is part of the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And I hesitate to even use the word mythology. It's not mythology. It was first a play and then it was a movie. And obviously Disney must own it because they couldn't possibly be using this otherwise. But it really bugs me that they've essentially just pulled two random characters out of a very serious drama, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and have kind of just taken them down to caricature. I could deal with it more with Nurse Ratched, but the character of the Indian in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, they've just kind of relegated him to being the janitor, and I'm not even convinced it's like Chief Bromden is actually even Chief Bromden. I mean, I'm not so sure they haven't just thrown an actor in red face, handed him a broom and go mop. Like, I don't know. It's really starting to bug me. I'm hoping that I am not seeing the least common denominator here, but I feel like I am.
No, I think that those things are really good to pick up on, and because you never know when people are going to come back and what their purpose is. And even if the Once Upon a Time creators are realizing that they're there, but I feel like they're smart enough to know what they're doing with these characters. But at the same time, like you're saying, we keep seeing them over and over again and getting nothing out of their purpose there other than like, oh, it's a familiar face. If you're going to do something with that property, do something with that property.
Right.
Before we get any further into talking about things, I don't want to lose Kristen's favorite quote. So what was your favorite quote?
Mine was from the flashbacks to the Enchanted Forest where they were at the ball and Cinderella was, you know, meeting her prince and all that fun stuff. And Cinderella, like, looks at him and Snow kind of points out the prince and she goes, "You think he could be charming?" And Snow White goes, "Oh, that name's taken." And then Charming just kind of swoops in and they dance away. And it was really cute. And it just... I love little stuff like that. Just play down words and all that good stuff.
Yeah, in that moment, David's so cute. He doesn't even have to say anything. It's just a good reminder of them as a couple. This episode did that a lot, and we'll dive into that. But let's start with Cinderella, since the episode is titled The Other Shoe, and that's the character we're really heavily focused on. We get a little bit more about Cinderella's backstory. What we knew before this episode was that she had struck a deal with Rumpel in order to go to this ball, and that deal ended up being, again, something that Once Upon a Time is revisited last season, which is giving up your child before you even know you have a child, and Rumpel staked claim on Ella's child with Thomas, and they were going to run away and all this stuff, and we all know how that worked out. She has the child. They're living happily in Storybrooke. What we didn't get was the story of the stepmother and her stepsister in particular, Clorinda. In this episode, we see a little bit of a shift away from the story that we know where the stepsisters are inherently as bad as the stepmother. And the stepmother is really off her rocker in this. The actress who played her was, I think, phenomenal. We get a little bit of this sympathetic backstory for the other sister. And I was wondering what you guys thought of their take on Clorinda and what you thought of Clorinda as a character.
I loved it. I thought the whole storytelling on this was really sharp. I liked the acting. I really loved the spin that they put on it. I was like, oh, and it had me questioning whether she was sincere at first or if it was a double cross on some level. Like, I really, really enjoyed the entire storyline. Yeah, it was great. And actually, the only thing that I was left wondering was what happened to the other stepsister. That was the only loose end for me, but I totally enjoyed it.
For me, I had one specific, like, gripe about it. I also agree that the stepmother is crazy evil and that actress was amazing. And I had flashbacks to the Disney movie, like, she nailed it. But the stepsister, who turns out to never have wanted all the things her mother wants for her, and she just wants to, you know, marry someone she cares about and go start a farm, she still, I'm assuming, because up until we saw the story unfold tonight, I'm assuming we're going with the classic Cinderella tale, she still treated Cinderella like crap for a really long time. Like, it seems, you know, thank goodness that Cinderella is a very forgiving person, but, like, I love that the stepsister just decided she had the right to be mad at Cinderella for all of the things that went down in this episode with the key and her showing up and her blaming her for, you know, being separated from her love. And it's like, you sat there and watched your stepmother, your mother, treat Cinderella like total crap for a long time and didn't do anything about it. And now you have the right to be mad at her? Like, that bugged me a little. But besides that, I liked what they did with the story. I liked how it changed, and I liked that she wasn't inherently evil like her mother.
Yeah, I really thought that the twist where she came and wasn't trying to get Cinderella in trouble or beat her down or anything. Like you're saying, though, Kristen, she took that situation when she came back and was like, I'm running away even though I know I'm going to be hunted. And she found that escape, and she was willing to flaunt her little happy ending in comparison to Cinderella's, even knowing that Cinderella had a better life. She still has that whole history of treating Cinderella like dirt. We didn't see it or, you know, get the sense that Cinderella ever felt anything but hatred towards the stepmother and the stepsisters. But we do get that moment at the end where she is so willing to kill Ashley, I guess because of her storybook name, in the present day, that it just seems so radical and such a shift that it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Do you remember anything that happened and what you did and the risk that she was willing to take? And it is a fine line between, was Cinderella being selfish or was she actually still like kind of traumatized from the stepmother, even though she was, in a sense, giving over her sister for her happiness? But it didn't work out anyway. And that whole situation is so complicated and layered, and they really packaged it well in the amount of time that they gave to this, because this is one of those one-off episodes. It had a beginning, a middle, and an end. Like, we know what the fate is of the stepmother. She's picking up garbage with Grumpy by the end of the episode. I keep calling him Grumpy. I know it's Leroy. But for some reason in my mind, I just always want to call him Grumpy.
It's fun to call him Grumpy.
Yeah. I mean, that's or like the town crier.
Yeah, yeah.
And he still is a little grumpy, so yeah. It's not completely out of character.
Yeah, but we get this beginning, middle, and end with Cinderella's story. And the middle is what I kind of really want to focus on. And that comes into starting with her knowledge of the key and her being willing to give it to her stepsister as a means of escape, because she knows that she has a better option to stay in the world that they live in with the prince and have the good life and still be able to coexist with her stepmother because she'll be so far removed. So giving her sister that one act is just really powerful. But when she comes back, what really bothered me in the storybook story was seeing Ashley take a gun to go and kill the stepmother because she knows that she's back. I feel like storybook is getting a little bit too, like, homicide-y.
Yeah, I have to say, that kind of actually, you know, and it's kind of weird, too. I mean, there's certainly been enough swords and dueling pistols that under Hooks and Cap, you know, era that, like, popped up. But this was the first time we saw a modern gun. Like, even Emma, as, you know, a bail bondsman or whatever, you know, certainly could carry a firearm, being licensed to carry one, and one would presume that she would for her safety. But it was a little weird, actually, watching somebody point a firearm at somebody. I mean, and I don't know, maybe I shouldn't have been shocked at it. I mean, Lord knows they've ripped enough hearts out of people's chests. But I was like, oh, are you really you're pointing that at a human being? Oh, like, I was really kind of, this is getting a little violent. What show am I watching? And then part of my brain was going, you moron, they, like I said, rip hearts out of people's chests, and now you're taking offense to a firearm? So I don't know. It was definitely a little, I guess it was a little more hyper real than we're used to seeing. So I think that's what it had to do with more than anything.
Yeah, I think it's the recognizable threat, because like, I can't walk up to someone and rip their heart out without, like, some serious, like, being on some crazy drugs or steroids or something. Like, there's right. No way that that's a possibility. And right. there's this suspension of disbelief that we're in this fairy tale world, and it's a like a heightened reality of like, yeah, swords. And like, if you're watching like a Revolutionary War movie, you're not thinking like, oh my gosh, they have a bayonet. Like, you know, it's like, that's a right. thing that was there. But here they're not using magic to like, you know, cast someone aside or get rid of this big evil person who has worse powers or can conjure up some sort of poison or, you know, there, that kind of takes you out of the consequence story, but they've always dealt with death on this show. This is death, like you were saying, Laura, death is not new. We've seen people die. We've seen them succumb to poison, stabbings, whatever. But the fact that we're seeing someone in a prolonged shot holding a gun was, it was just very jarring. And to have that happen one episode after you see Regina kill someone without the aid of magic, it was very just back-to-back weeks. So we're only in episode 3 and this has happened twice, and it just it's right. starting to shake me a little bit out of the comfort of, I don't want to say comfort of seeing someone's heart ripped out, but that familiarity of like, oh, I know the consequences of this and I know what these characters are feeling when they perform these actions. But this is something new, and you're taking storybook characters and giving, putting a gun in the hands of Cinderella, basically.
Well, and I think we're probably going to see more of that, because the characters coming out of the Land of Untold Stories aren't all fairy tale characters. With Jekyll and Hyde, like, their world is science, and it doesn't have, like, magic. Like, they're not as used to the magic. So I can see there being more of a use of real weapons. In here, it freaks me out, too, because we're so used to just seeing, you know, these other weapons, the weapons you would use in the Enchanted Forest, not in, you know, modern day America. That's what we're used to watching these people work with. So to have them use modern weapons, and it's like, wait, what? I did want to just point out, since I know we'll probably get comments on it, Emma did have a gun in the first season. She shot it at the dragon.
Yes.
She did have a gun and she did use it, but I don't think she ever pointed it at people. Like, it was never a real threat.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, like, I never remember.
Or like, if she did.
I remember her pointing it. I mean, someone will clearly write in and tell us if we have gotten this wrong, but that's it. I just really don't remember, like, a person, and certainly not like a shotgun. Like, that's
exactly.
Like, that's hello. That could do serious damage. And not that a regular pistol can't. But like a shotgun,
it's foreboding. It's
absolutely.
It's intense. Yeah, that whole scene was very intense. But I just wanted to throw that out there. She did have a gun, and we are aware of that.
Yeah, and I think that those agents had guns too. Like right before Neverland happened. But I don't think that they were ever used in the visual effect that this was, because you're staring, it is literally Cinderella standing there holding a gun, and it's looking at the TV, and you know that you're in the position of the stepmother or Emma and Hook, because, you know, that's when she was confronting them. So it was very jarring, as opposed to the other thing where you see Emma being this fish out of water shooting at a dragon. If that were you, yes, you would do that. But are you going to be the person to hold up your friends in an alley because you're trying to stop someone else? Like, it's a different type of scenario. But yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because I wasn't sure if I was reading too much into it or if it was a little bit of a jarring image for season 6. But I did like what you said, Kristen, because we are dealing with these stories that are not all set in worlds where magic exists. You have to turn to science in Jekyll and Hyde's world. You have to turn to machinery and these other ways of hunting and hurting people, unfortunately, but that's very true. They're going to be mixing in a lot of different elements from different stories going forward. One story that we're slowly working towards this season is the Emma's visions coming true. She's having more insufferable hand tremors. One was really bad. Her face was shaking too this time. It was really, but we're getting the sense that her sessions with Archie she's becoming a little bit too dependent on them because she cannot talk to anyone else. So I'm curious to see whether you guys think that these sessions are helping or if they're kind of hindering Emma's progress a bit, because right now she's barging into other people's sessions because she has no one else to talk to. And I feel like Archie might be taking her path to telling people a little bit too slowly, but then at the same time, maybe Emma needs that. I'm just curious where you guys are falling on what Archie's therapy is doing right now.
I thought it was just sort of interesting in that he basically kicked Leroy out, like, and he had 30 more minutes to go. So I thought that was a little weird, because I don't think most doctors do that unless you're in the middle of a horrendous crisis. And Emma was like, oh, no, oh, my gosh, I can come back. I mean, she wasn't having a meltdown, as far as I could tell. But at the same time, even though that was a little weird, I'm like going, maybe we jumped the gun a little bit there too much. I did like at the end that she was able, because a lot of what Archie was telling her about were fears and things like that. And in the end, she was able to ask Cook to move in with her. So in a sense, I don't know. I feel like it overall, it probably is helping her.
I didn't really have any major thoughts about the therapy sessions, like, as they were happening. But by the end of the episode and seeing her, you know, kind of let Hook see her be vulnerable, like, he saw the tremor, he saw her unable to use her magic. And then for her to ask him to move in, it's like she's not hiding from him. She might still be hiding from her parents, but if she's asking him to move into her life fully and into her house, she's not going to be able to hide much for very long. Like, he's going to see everything that's going on. So I'm hoping that this means that she's really letting him in and that she's not going to hide everything that's going on with her from him for too long.
Yeah, because she did bring up the fact that one of the things that's weighing on her is Hook seeing this or wanting to see this future with her and her not being able to think that she can give it to him. And that's really weighing on her right now, because we know based on these visions that she dies. And so she doesn't want to, I guess, lead him on into thinking like, yes, in a few years you can put whipped cream on your nose and taunt our child. And, you know, so she's seeing all of what could be and how happy Hook is, but she's afraid to take that step, understandably, because she knows it may never come true, or she actually believes it won't come true at this point. But she is opening up to him in a way. So she's being vulnerable. She's letting him in. She's sharing her. She's going to move some of her leather jackets so his leather jackets can come and hang out. And it's going to be beautiful and wonderful, and I want to talk about it all the time, because Hook sparring with Henry and hanging out with the child, and just like him and Henry have this language where, like, he's like, he finds him so amusing, and no one finds Henry amusing, but Hook is just like, what did you call it? Bonding with mom, bonding. He's like just joking around with him, and I think it's so nice to see really leaning into that side of his character, because for so long he's felt so isolated, and now he kind of has that little bit of normality in his life.
Oh my God. Him with the little, with Ashley?
Yes.
With her kid in the booth with the frosting and the tell me about your doggy. Like, oh my God. Just, it killed me.
I think women's ovaries spontaneously youthened everywhere as
I was like,
started.
Can you be any cuter? Like, seriously, it just, and I noticed that I think he got a haircut in that scene for some reason. The way he was moving his head, I was like, I think they gave Hook a haircut, and it stood out to me. But yeah, no, it was just such a cute little thing, and they did a lot of that in this episode. Like, we got to see Hook be more than just broody Hook. And that was all really, really fun.
Yeah, and he was hesitant at first. He's like, oh, what? I don't know what to... But instead of being like, no, I don't know what to do, he, like, really leaned into it, and he was so into it, and he tried all these different things, and the kid just wanted nothing to do with him, unfortunately. But it was so cute. He didn't just stop and be like, I don't know what I'm doing. And that gave Emma a chance to see, like, he's willing to work at these things that are uncomfortable for him. So her working on things that are uncomfortable for her just makes sense. And I really hope that talks about this soon, if not with everyone, with him, because he's the one who is, I think, going to be able to set her right and course correct a little bit before she goes to what I was just going to refer to as the Hope Brigade. So let's talk about the Hope Brigade. Snow and David are kind of in a a weird place in their relationship where Snow wants to maybe take a break from the curses and the daily grind of there's a problem and we solve it, problem, solve it, problem, solve it. She wants a little bit of a normal life, and she's craving a little bit of time that she had during the curse, because that was when she woke up, she taught, she came home, she felt rewarded, she had a wonderful relationship. David is in this position of finding out about his father, kind of starting to feel the rumblings of vengeance, because we come to learn that his father did not die due to a drunken accident. He was stabbed and found in a cart wreckage. So whether or not he was drunk, I don't think that they, you know, took a blood alcohol content sample in the Enchanted Forest and had it sent off, and you know, but who knows? those results could come back. Snow recognizes immediately that he is looking for now the next epic adventure. And that epic adventure is finding this person and making them pay for his father's death. Whereas she's seeing the next epic adventure as, oh my God, will Neil sleep through the night? So what do you guys think of Snow's sort of step back and look at the bigger picture of the smaller group that's right in front of her? So she's always been one to be like, my kingdom needs me, but now her kingdom is only 4 or 5 people, and she just wants to make sure that Emma's all right and she can do fine on her own, but she's really giving her focus to David and Neil.
I like Snow's overall arc in this more, in that she's thinking about, you know, we can't keep doing this. There has to be like some sort of normal that we're building towards. So I kind of liked that she wanted to reassess and redefine her life by her choice and something that she enjoyed, which was being a teacher. I was kind of good with all of this. I mean, I'm also sure it probably serves a practical level for Ginny Goodwin, too, who now is the mother of 2 children. But I really liked Snow is deciding what Snow wants based upon what she really likes, not deciding to do something because an ogre is attacking today or the magic smoke monster has just come up. And like, she's getting to plan and actually do something she really enjoyed. So I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's nice to see them both, especially Snow, but both of them kind of being a little more preemptive. What's the word? Proactive. Like, rather than just reacting to everything that's coming at them, like, Snow is looking at what they've got and what's there in front of them and is saying, I want to go back to teaching. And I think these two gentlemen could teach science. And I think that, you know, we have the makings of a community here, and she wants to, you know, settle everything down and stop fighting all these battles all the time. And who can blame her? They've been in battle for a long time. And I like she's being proactive about what she wants. David, on the other hand, is still kind of reactive because he's still dealing with the Evil Queen has told him, but in the same way, he is being proactive about it. He's not just waiting for her to use this against him again and just sitting back and waiting on it. Like, he wants to go and do something about it. So I do like that the Charmings, while not working against each other, also aren't completely in sync. They've done a lot and reacted together a lot over the last couple of seasons. So it's nice to see them have their own reasons and their own things that they want to do, and to see where that goes from here will be really interesting.
Yeah, it kind of made me think of what life would have been like for them in the Enchanted Forest had Emma never gone away and they actually got to carry on their lives, because David made a comment in the episode saying, that sounds like a life that Mary Margaret would have wanted. And Snow is like, no, I am fully aware of who I am, and this is the life that I am envisioning. And I think that maybe if they had Emma and they were still living there, she would still have those tiny adventures, helping the villagers rebuild after a fire, or helping something that's going on, like, you know, little like issues within her kingdom. But at the end of the day, she's home, she's with Emma, she's with David. They're not going on year-long quests tracking the Evil Queen across the landscape. You know, it's more easier to manage, I should say. And you still have those tiny little things that get you out of bed in the morning and places to go and people to see. But at night, you have those responsibilities to your family. And I think she's sort of, that is the life she craved when she was Snow. And now she got a glimpse of an extreme version of that as Mary Margaret. And now she went back to the extreme of being Snow. And she wants to find that middle ground, adventure and domesticity. But David, like you said, I think he needs to, he's not against it and he's not always looking for an epic adventure, but he does need to reel it in a little and meter halfway. So we'll see how that works out, and we will see what comes of him and his father, and if anything, you know, he didn't burn the card that Rumpel gave him, so that's obviously going to be still in play, whether Snow finds it or he goes about it on his own. And, oh, family issues. So we have Zelina and Regina and the Evil Queen again. This scene felt very, like it could have been cut from this episode and saved for another episode. I think all of the Evil Queen stuff this week felt very forced into this episode.
Yeah, it was like, oh, wait, we agreed to show her in so many episodes. Let's show our friend Zelina, just in case we've forgotten what she looks like. Yeah, I don't really know why that scene had to, I don't know. It was just very poorly developed.
Yeah, I felt like we didn't get any further with Regina and Zelina. We're hearing like, oh, yeah, she stopped by, and yeah, the rattle's there, and yeah, there's strings attached. And that conversation, we've heard it before. I guess we're getting the confirmation now that Zelina knows that both parties are aware of interacting, but that could have been saved for the next episode. There was also that scene where the Evil Queen is with Emma, and she's sort of saying that she has a role here with trying to end happy endings and really get under Emma's skin. And I think this is just one of those vengeance and grudges playing out. And I get the feeling that this one is more of a personal grudge that Regina buried for so long when Emma first came to Storybrooke that's slowly boiling over in this extreme form because we have pure evil standing there. And she's representing all of the buried aggressions of Regina. And so this one in particular is the fact that, oh, you're only here to do a job. You're not here to be a mother. You're not here to be a girlfriend. You're not here to be a daughter. You're here to fulfill a job. And what are you if you're not that job? And she's getting under Emma's skin. And she was only in that scene for like not that long. And it was really affecting as a viewer, not let alone being Emma. So what do you guys think of the Evil Queen's overall plan? Or did you really not pick up on anything yet?
I still don't know where it's all going. I don't know. I'm curious. You know what it is? It's kind of a little strange. I feel like there's just a lack of chaos. Like, is it just me, or is like the Evil Queen not batshit enough? You know, I just feel like she's a little calm.
Yeah, she's proceeding with a little too much grace and elegance. Like, that's fantastic. That's a big quality of hers, but we're not blowing anything up.
I mean,
I
know that we've gone, like, very Star Trek here and severed, like, you know, good Kirk from bad Kirk and all of that. But, like, I still feel like Evil Queen would be a little more wah-ha-ha-ha, and we're not getting that.
Yeah, my issue with this whole Evil Queen Regina thing is that the Evil Queen is coming off a little too Regina for me. They are the same person, but they're supposed to be the two distinctly different sides. Like, the Evil Queen is supposed to be all of that horrible stuff that Regina's done in her past that she wants to put behind her, but has always had trouble doing. So you expect that part of her personality, now that it is, has its own agency and is its own person, to be doing the things that the Evil Queen would be doing. And instead, she's just kind of walking around and planting little seeds and not really causing the chaos that we would expect from her. So either she's cooking to something really, really big that is going to explode in an episode or two or something, or it's just, you know, there's just not enough of her right now. Like, there's just not enough of her manipulations and her, like, playing behind the scenes. It's we need more of the straight up evil queen.
Yeah, and maybe it's because the flashbacks have to be condensed that we're seeing her actions be like idea, action, reaction. And here it's like idea, oh, we're still in the same day. Oh, we're still in the same day. Oh, we're still in the same day. So like it's a very slow burn with this evil queen. And I did like what you brought up, Laura, about her feeling too much like Regina and they're not really distinct enough. And I think that that is a really fair observation, because when Regina is getting like angry and stuff, I still feel like she hasn't changed as a person. And maybe that's the whole point, but like maybe you can't actually separate yourself. And I think that's going to come into play next week, because we're getting Jekyll and Hyde's backstory. And so maybe we'll get a little bit more of the mechanics of how splitting a personality actually goes and what is in each part and what makes up each part. And maybe it's a little more muddy than a straight line between good and evil. And I'm looking forward to that, because I'd like to see what they're going to do with Jekyll and Hyde, and the two actors that they have are just so good. I want to watch Hyde all the time. So I'm kind of excited he's going to be featured a little bit more next week.
Me too. I definitely agree. Yeah. Plus with the way we were introduced to Jekyll and Hyde, I've always kind of put them at the center of this Land of Untold Stories plot, like the whole idea of all these things. So to get back to their story next week is really important, because I want to know if we're going to get like all of their story, or if this is just a big chunk of it and they'll continue to kind of be the centerpiece of all of this. Like, I'm interested to see how they fit into the rest.
Yeah, because besides the premiere, which we were all kind of like lukewarm on, you know, Hyde got caught within like the first 5 minutes, and then that was it. It was just like, oh, he's just going to sit in like, you know, solitary the whole time. And we haven't really gotten to see what he's worth besides being a bucket of information. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting a little bit more about them and their role, because I agree. I think that, judging by the end of season 5, they were going to be the centerpiece of the Land of Stories, and they know what's going on. He was the warden, so he was a central role in the Land of Stories, because he's in charge of discipline and all this other stuff. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to see how they unpack Jekyll and Hyde and the larger landscape of Once Upon a Time. There are, unfortunately, two more characters we kind of have to discuss really quickly. And we'll get it out of the way. Rumpel calls upon David to do him a favor because, you know, he's great at making deals. And he wants to deliver something to Belle. David delivers it. And it's a tape of Rumpel recording his favorite, you know.
Which is Scottish. Yeah, I just had to throw that out there. The Oh My Bairnie is a very famous Scottish, I won't call it a nursery rhyme, a poem, ballad, I guess we could call it. But I was like, clearly Robert Carlyle has used his own accent throughout the course of the show. And that's fine. Just like Emily Deravin has clearly used her natural Australian accent throughout the show. And any number of people, you know, Colin O'Donoghue is using his natural Irish accent. But it was just very weird to see that Rumpel suddenly has this chant for like Scottish poetry.
Are we getting more of your backstory with Merida? And did you live there for a long time?
Yes. I'm going any second now, he's going to break into a chorus of Loch Lomond. I was like, what the? That was very weird.
Yeah. But unfortunately, we saw Belle be a little bit moved by it. And I get the symbolism. It's a gesture of I do want to be a father. Being a father is important to me, but hopefully that is not enough to move Belle, because my goodness, we cannot have that. She needs to really not feed into Rumpel, and Rumpel is really hitting her low because with this. Oh, but next week we get his haircut. Finally. I'm so excited. In the preview for the next episode, Robert Carlyle finally debuts the Trainspotting haircut, and I am...
Well, it has, although I will say it has been, like, much shorter this year.
I think, than well, it was he's last definitely year. Wearing a hairpiece right now because, or he has, I would think so, because they didn't start filming. He didn't film Once Upon a Time and then go film Trainspotting and then come back. He filmed Trainspotting first.
Oh, I didn't know. See, I didn't know the order. Okay.
No, yeah, because I only know this because him and John Lee Miller went straight from Once Upon a Time in Elementary to start filming at the beginning of the summer. So it's like they wrapped and they were in Scotland within 2 days.
I'm personally hoping that we can pull a little bit of a Samson and that most of his selfishness was in his hair.
Yes.
And so when they cut it, he just stops thinking about himself all the time. That's what I'm going for. Instead of the strength, it's the selfishness.
That would be incredible. I think we mentioned that before, and yeah. I am still so into that idea. That would be a really good move Once Upon a Time. If you can get into your editing room and change the episode so that it fulfills our wishes, we'd really appreciate it.
I mean, it would be a personal favor.
Yeah, consider it a personal favor. Also, in the preview, they said, in 2 weeks, Aladdin's coming. Is anyone actually still excited that that's happening? Because...
No, because we've all been retconned to pretend that this whole story didn't happen.
That not only that, but like we're so desensitized to story of the week that I feel like Aladdin is going to be the same thing. And
yeah, another flash of the pan. Like, bring back Red. Bring back
exactly. You know,
I love Cinderella. Bring back Sleeping Beauty. Bring back Mulan. Bring back so many other people. Bring back Ariel. Let us have some sort of unfinished Ariel story. That would be fun.
Yeah, I'm just not... It'll be fine. It's going to give us more insight into the Savior mythology. I'm looking forward to it from that perspective. But I love Aladdin, but I don't... It's another property I kind of was happy they didn't touch. They touched it in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, but I could easily forget about that because they forgot it existed, so... We'll see. They're going to bring up the Savior stuff, and we'll probably get a few funny part of your world one-liners, and everyone will giggle, and it'll be great.
I think the only part of the Aladdin storyline that I'm at all excited about is the Savior mythology. So it's like, if that's what's coming from it, then sure. But I'm not looking forward to seeing Jafar again.
And I really hope that they do not have, like, a CGI tiger to play Raja, because I would not be able to handle it. I'd be like, no, no, no. Use your money elsewhere.
Well, they are going to be rocking a CGI tiger this year on Walking Dead, so maybe they can borrow the technology. Who knows?
Like, AMC, let's work together.
Yeah, listen, you need a tiger, we need a tiger. Let's talk terms. What's your tiger for again? Aladdin. It's for Aladdin.
Ours needs to be a little friendlier.
Yeah, can you make the eyes a little doughier?
Like, yeah.
Have a playful nature about it.
A little less, I'm an instrument of death, and more, let's play fetch.
And look condescendingly at Aladdin, who I know is lying.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, anyway, next week is episode 4. It's called Strange Case. So that's going to be, again, all about Jekyll and Hyde and probably a bit more about the Land of Untold Stories and what their role was there. And, yeah, we'll be back to give you our thoughts on that. So until then, I'm Brittany.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura. Bye.
Bye.